Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. In early 1983, my daughter had one of those experiences that she and I and her sister and her mother will never forget. She thinks it amounts to a digital flotsam experience, and having been there, I can't help but agree. At the time of the events reported on in this episode, my wife and I were both working, and my two wonderful daughters, Kim and Billy, were going to school. They were the most amazing and trustworthy kids you could imagine. I am calling this episode Brain Dead 3, and I am turning over the microphone to Ms. Billy Fenton.
Many of you faithful Digital Flotsam listeners may remember back to episode number 22, where my dad proved that all adolescent boys are brain dead. He told the story of how he and a group of his young friends burned down a wooded hillside while playing with matches. Typical stupid boy behavior, right? A girl would never do anything like that. Well, I beg to differ. I was about 13 years old when I did the single most stupid thing of my entire life. I was in 8th grade when my middle school was awarded a half day off because we had the best attendance record in the county. This means that hundreds of 11, 12, and 13-year-olds would be going home around 11:30 instead of the normal 3:15 on a Friday afternoon. It was a warm, sunny spring afternoon, and my neighborhood friends and I planned to get together after we ate lunch. Normally, my sister would be home an hour before me, since she was in high school. But today, I was left to fend for myself since she wouldn't be home for another 2 to 3 hours. I got home and quickly made myself a bologna and cheese sandwich. We didn't have any dastardly plans. We were all probably just going to hang out at Barry's swimming pool since it was such a beautiful day out. I changed into a half t-shirt and a pair of shorts, sat there and ate my sandwich watching Days of Our Lives when Sean called. Sean was Barry's best friend, who was actually in the 9th grade in high school, but who had cut his afternoon classes to come hang out with us. "Get your ass over here," he said. "We're all drinking." "What do you mean we're all drinking?" "We broke into Barry's parents' liquor cabinet and we're drinking. Get over here." I must preface the rest of this story by saying that I had a bit of a reputation in my neighborhood when it came to alcohol. At 13, I was known as the local lush. Now don't freak out, I wasn't really an alcoholic. It's just that my parents brought me up with a healthy attitude towards alcohol. It wasn't verboten. Being half Italian, it was just part of everyday life. At holiday dinners at my Italian grandmother's house, it was not unheard of for me or my sister to maybe have half a glass of wine weakened with some Sprite or club soda. At this point in my life, I had never had more than a sip or two, and I didn't want more than that. I didn't actually like the taste of it. My friends were amazed by my family's attitude. They would have been skinned alive if any of their parents ever caught them drinking, let alone offered them a little at holiday dinners. I remember one afternoon hanging out with my friends on my front stoop when I asked my dad for a sip of his beer. Without hesitation, he handed me his beer, I took a sip, and handed it right back to him. As my dad went back into the house, I turned back to my friends, who were all staring at me dumbfounded. From that day on, I was the neighborhood boozer, even though I had never been inebriated once in my entire life. Anyway, back to my story. I hung up the phone with Sean, finished my bologna and cheese sandwich, and headed over to Barry's house. When I walked in the front door, I wasn't prepared for what I saw. There was Barry, Sean, my best friend Michelle, Tim, the guy I had a crush on, Buffer, another neighborhood pal, don't ask me about the name, I don't know where it came from, and Barry's little sister Lori. Everyone but Lori was completely and totally shit-faced. Tim and Sean were smoking one of Barry's dad's cigars. Michelle was running around poking everybody with a dildo she found in Barry's mom's dresser. And Barry and Buffer were laughing and holding on to each other as if one of them would fall down if the other one wasn't there to hold him up. I know now that most of this was young teenage theatrics because it had maybe been 30 minutes since the school bus had dropped us all off, and no one really had the time to get that drunk. But back then, all I knew was that I had a lot of catching up to do. So I asked, "Where's the booze?" Tim led me back to Barry's room, to Barry's closet, where it was hidden. Everyone followed because, of course, within this group, I was the experienced drinker, and everyone wanted to see what I would do. This is the exact point where I apparently lost all reason, and stupid Billy showed up. Everyone was looking at me with anticipation, as if whatever I was going to do was going to teach them something magical about the wonderful world of drinking. They were expecting something extraordinary, and, well, I stepped up to the plate. The contents of the bottle consisted of a little bit of every other bottle from Barry's parents' liquor cabinet. Since to this day, the smell of a certain spirit reminds me of the smell of vomit, I'm pretty sure Barry's dad was a whiskey drinker. The bottle used to contain this amalgam of spirits was a fifth of JD. I took the bottle and chugged. And chugged. And chugged. When the bottle was handed to me, there was maybe 3 inches missing from the top. When I was done with it, there was about 3 inches left in it. Impressed with my drinking, everyone decided to take another swig from the bottle. I don't remember clearly, but apparently the party got a little crazy at that point. Michelle and Buffer were having a pillow fight with the sofa cushions, and Buffer and Tim went on smoking cigars, except now their ashes were being flicked on the carpet. My stupidity, of course, increased exponentially from this point on. I just kept getting stupider and stupider. Stupider and stupider. Stupider and stupider. I went looking through Barry's mom's dresser to see what other sex aids and devices she might have, and I began throwing her clothes all over the place. That's when Barry decided we needed to leave his house. It was decided that we would go out to the tree.
The tree.
I have to explain the tree. The tree was this huge live oak in the middle of a cow pasture on a farm that neighbored our development. It had large, low-hanging branches, and it was easy to climb and sit in. Since there were no convenience stores or shopping plazas within walking distance, the tree was where we all hung out. It was close enough that our parents didn't mind us going out there, but far enough away that our parents couldn't see what we were doing. Whenever we were looking for a place to go, the tree was always where we ended up. This day was no exception, except for the fact that I don't ever remember getting there. To get to the tree from Barry's house, we had to walk, or rather stumble, to the end of the street to a cul-de-sac, climb over a barbed wire fence, walk around a small pond that resembled a cesspool, and then go about 100 yards across an open field. I remember walking to the cul-de-sac and falling a few times on my ass. I remember miraculously getting over the barbed wire fence without a scratch. I remember almost falling into that cesspool. But it was somewhere between there and the tree that my memory ceased. What happened over the next few hours, I only know bits and pieces of from what the others told me a few days later. Apparently, I was running all over the place lifting up my shirt. Then I attacked Tim and started making out with him. When they finally calmed me down and sat me on a branch in the tree, I threw up what my friends identified as a bologna and cheese sandwich, all over myself and Tim. The last thing I was told was that I was sitting on a branch when I finally passed out. I fell right out of the tree onto an ant pile, a fire ant pile.
Fire ant, a stinging ant. Specifically, any of numerous small, fiercely stinging, omnivorous ants, principally found in warm regions.
This is when everyone started freaking out. Not because of the ants. I don't think any of them were aware of the ants munching on my torso and left arm. No, they were worried about how to get me out of the pasture and back to Barry's house so they could put me under a cold shower. That's how you sober people up on TV. It seemed like a good plan. Except they had no idea how they were going to get me back over that barbed wire fence. So they decided to get help. They all left me on the ant pile in the middle of a cow pasture so they could get Chris, an 18-year-old who lived nearby. I have no idea how long I was out there alone before Chris came and carried me out of the field. Once over the fence, some of our adult neighbors began to notice this group of kids, with an older teenager carrying a dead girl over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes. They, of course, started to ask questions. Michelle, trying to think of something that would not get us all in trouble, said, "Oh, she's okay. She just fell and hit her head. She'll be fine." An ambulance was called. Memory of the day's events began again a few hours later. I was lying down. There were really bright lights above me, and I couldn't focus my eyes on anything. I heard a nice lady calling my name. "Billy, Billy, can you hear me?" My eyes began to clear a bit, and I started to look around for her. But instead, I saw my grandmother, my grandfather, my sister and her boyfriend Bob, and my mom and dad all standing around me. I couldn't understand why they were there. It took a few moments before I realized I was in a hospital, and a few more moments to realize why. I immediately started sobbing. "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry." I spent the night in the hospital recovering from having my stomach pumped and worrying what was going to happen to me the next morning. What kind of punishment was I going to get for doing something so incredibly stupid? The moment of truth came that morning when my parents came to take me home. I was prepared for anything but what I actually got. They took a look at me, looked at the hundreds and hundreds of ant bites covering my torso and arm, and said, "We think all this is punishment enough." They were right. Now, I started this story with the premise that girls can be just as stupid as boys. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe I have failed. I don't think this story proves that girls can be just as stupid as boys. I think it proves that I can be just as stupid. I did something so stupid, it cost my parents $5,000 in hospital bills. I'm not really sure why I told this story anymore. Maybe this stupidity's genetic.
but it really says it all. And it feels good to keep it. It feels good. It feels good to keep it.
It feels so good.
It feels good.
Now my word could be as big or as small as I choose to make it. It can freeze or burn, be loud or taciturn, but it really says it all. Just don't know where I'd be, because you see, I'd lose it all.
This is Rudolph
and Irma
of the Rudolph and Irma Dance Studios. And if you have a dollar bill...
Any dollar bill...
That's green...
It entitles you to one free dance lesson at...
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios, located at 5913 Harper Street in Auvergne, Long Island.
And if you don't have a dollar bill...
Any Lincoln Head penny will do.
And if you don't happen to be one of the lucky holders of a Lincoln Head penny...
You can show us an empty change purse.
Or an empty wallet.
And still get a free dance lesson... Provided you give us a verbal statement of intent that you plan to buy a wallet.
Or a change purse. And that address again is...
Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios, 5913 Harper Street.
Auvergne, Long Island.
Where you learn the breakaway fade, popularized by Henry Armstead, Wizard of the Waxed Floors.
Or perhaps you'll be taken by the conga manga. A combination of the conga...
And the manga. As taught by Perry Sanchez... The hero of the hardboards at
Rudolph and Irma's
Dance Studios in Auvergne, Long Island.
And for you older folk who prefer a less lively dance step, chat with us about learning the creak.
A mild dance step made well known by that septuagenarian of slide, Amos Kneezer.
And of course, there are the more popular steps you can learn.
Like the jockey trot.
Or the hot coal hop.
And of course, the very much in vogue cocktail dip.
It's taught by... Felicia Floodgate, the siren of the surfaces.
All this at Rudolph and Irma's Dance Studios in Auvergne, Long Island.
Where you'll find dancing a pleasure.
On our deep pile rugs.
And tastefully furnished offices.
And don't forget to ask about our colored rotating chandelier.
Which throws a myriad of multicolored lights on each dancing student.
And for those of you who care for music while you're dancing...
I fooled you before, didn't I? What you thought was the theme turned out to be the world premiere of the song that the band Three Blind Mice made my theme song from. A beautiful song called The Word. It's not for sale anywhere yet, so you'll just have to buy their earlier CDs. Bob and Ray appeared courtesy of producer Larry Josephson and bobandray.com. As always, detailed show notes will appear at digitalflotsam.org. I hope you enjoyed my daughter Billy's account of being brain dead, and I hope you realize that the version I will eventually tell of the very same story will have an entirely different perspective. I also take issue with her final words, where she suggests that her stupidity is genetic. She shouldn't talk about her mother like that. I'm out of here. Big Al, say the magic words.
And P-Dub, hold the microphone.